You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
It is the 1st of October. The day has come to an end and there's a lot to cover, so no preamble today. All the stories from the country and around the world are what I bring to you as usual on Stories of the Day. My name is Rakesh Sharma and you're listening to Money Control.
Editor's Pick of the Day.
Let's start with GST collection. In September, it declined to 91,916 crore rupees as opposed to 98,202 crore rupees in the preceding month, according to government rate data released today. The revenue collection in the same month a year ago stood at 94,442 crore rupees. The finance ministry said in a release, and I quote, "The total gross GST revenue collected in the month of September is 91,916 crore rupees, of which CGST is 16,630, SGST is 22,598, and IGST is 45,069 crore rupees, including 22,097 crore rupees collected on imports." It further said that the total number of GSTR 3B returns filed for the month of August was 75.94 lakh, and the revenue during the September month declined by 2.67% in comparison to the revenue collected in the same month a year ago. This is in continuation of the trend of GST not making the desired 1 lakh crore rupee collection each month. There's a new joint venture in town. Ford Motor Company and Mahindra & Mahindra will form a joint venture company in India valued at $275 million that will develop, market and distribute Ford-branded vehicles in the country, the two companies said today. The two companies have for months been negotiating the deal, which will see Ford hold a 49% stake in the new entity, while Indian rival Mahindra will own 51%. By shifting to a joint venture, Ford is changing its India strategy, where it has long run an independent operation. India's auto market is, of course, dominated by Asian automakers like Suzuki and Hyundai. Bloomberg has reported that the Ministry of Corporate Affairs has been investigating three Indiabulls Group companies since about a year and will submit its final report by the end of October, according to people familiar with the matter. Indiabulls Housing Finance, Indiabulls Ventures and Indiabulls Real Estate are being probed for potential wrongdoing by the Registrar of Companies, which is part of the Ministry of Corporate Affairs, the people said, asking not to be identified as the details are still private. Indiabulls has disclosed in court documents that the ministry is inspecting its books, a representative for the company said. Separately, the ministry has also imposed travel restrictions on the founders of Housing Development and Infrastructure Limited and may start inspecting the developers' books. HDIL isn't aware of any action against the company and its founders, HDIL said in an exchange filing. Growth in India's manufacturing sector remained weak in September, and forward-looking indicators in a private business survey suggest the country's wobbly economy is unlikely to start recovering anytime soon. The Nikkei Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index, that is PMI, compiled by IHS Market, was 51.4 in September, unchanged from last month. While it has been above the 50 mark, which separates growth from contraction for over 2 years, the growth rate in September and August have been the slowest since May of last year. Worryingly for the government and policymakers, overall demand only rose marginally in the month of September, hurt by almost no growth in exports and firms barely increased headcount last month, according to the survey. Factories also cut back on purchases of raw materials, indicating they do not expect a marked pickup in demand. India's economy expanded at an annual rate of 5% in the April to June quarter, the slowest in more than 6 years, and the government has announced several measures to try and revive growth. With overall inflation set to remain below the RBI's medium-term target of 4% in the coming months, the RBI is widely expected to cut rates at its October 4th Monetary Policy Committee review, adding to the 110 basis points of cuts already delivered this year. Still, despite the expected easing from the RBI and measures announced by the government to boost the economy, optimism among firms remained weak. The sub-index measuring the outlook for the next 12 months is the second lowest in over 2 years, this according to a report by Reuters. Bharti Airtel is planning to raise funds up to $1 billion, or about 7,000 crore rupees, via a bond issue by its subsidiary Network I2I, the proceeds of which will be used to reduce debt. Sources said that the fundraising is likely to be in the range of $750 million to $1 billion, and the final figure will be arrived at based on the market response. The proceeds from the issue will be utilized for pruning debt of Bharti Airtel. Bharti Airtel's debt stood at 1.16 lakh crore rupees as of June this year. Meanwhile, S&P Global Ratings has said it expects Bharti Airtel's leverage to remain elevated over the next 6 to 9 months, but improve gradually due to reduced capital spending and increasing stability in its India mobile operations. Sales of vehicles across the automobile sector continued their slide in September, with the leading manufacturers of passenger vehicles, two-wheelers and medium and heavy commercial vehicles reporting a sharp fall in their year-on-year domestic sales last month. While Maruti Suzuki reported a 27% drop at 1.1 lakh units, Bajaj Auto saw a 35% drop of motorcycles at 1.77 lakh units. Ashok Leyland announced the sale of 4,035 units of medium and heavy commercial vehicles, which is a 69% decline over September last year. So why is the decline continuing? What started as a problem on account of funding and liquidity squeeze in July to August of last year has now become more of a sentiment issue, with individuals looking to postpone and cut down on consumption expenditure. With GDP growth rate hitting levels of 5% for the first quarter ended June 2019 and wage growth not keeping pace with expectations, economists and market experts say that people are generally looking to reduce their expenditures and the sentiment has turned low. Those within the auto sector say that customers are postponing their vehicle purchases on various accounts, including expectations of GST rate cuts, hopes that transition from BS4 to BS6 norms may lead to big discounts, and expectations of bigger discounts in the festive season. Many within the industry are skeptical about a revival anytime soon. Business Standard has reported that Bank of Baroda, Axis Bank, ICICI Bank and State Bank of India could be staring at another wave of non-performing assets, especially in the telecom and construction sector, as there appears to be a divergence between the credit rating assigned and the financial health of the corresponding corporate entity, according to a latest sector report by Jefferies. In a note on Indian banks and financial institutions, co-authored by Nilanjan Karfa and Harshit Toshnival, Jefferies suggests there is a potential meaningful divergence between the ratings and the debt repayment ability. Yes Bank, Bank of Baroda, SBI, IndusInd Bank and RBL Bank are among the banks, Jefferies says, that are most prone to high risk emanating from ADAG, that is Anil Dhirubhai Ambani Group, Cox & Kings, CG Power, DHFL and SR Shipping. Sensex took a bit of a tumble of about 700 points intraday today. So what may be the reasons for the tumble and the continuing downturn that we're seeing on the Lal Street? Some key factors have been discussed by Business Standard. Financials have tumbled. Yes Bank, Indiabulls Housing Finance are among the prominent names there. There's, of course, the deepening crisis at Punjab and Maharashtra Cooperative Bank that also hit investor sentiment. We've, of course, spoken about subdued auto sales numbers, and that has also hurt sentiment and, of course, disappointing macro numbers. Some of the other headlines doing the rounds in the world of business: Rana Kapoor and group entities sell 2.16% stake in Yes Bank for 510 crore rupees. Users nod is a must for tracking cookies, says one EU court. And Rajkot oil seed complex close is October 1st of 2019. That's another piece of news. 86% of children staying away from home feel concerned about parents' health. This according to a new survey. Prestige forms a joint venture with DB Group to invest 2,000 crore rupees on hotel and convention center project in Delhi. SEBI has levied 28 lakh rupees fine on 7 firms for fraudulent trading in Kailash Auto Finance scrip. DHFL shares plummeted about 20% amid concerns over exposure to HDIL and PMC Bank. India business news done. Let's take a look at India news in general. Devendra Fadnavis is in a bit of a pickle now, in a jolt to the Chief Minister of Maharashtra. The Supreme Court today said the BJP leader will have to face trial for allegedly failing to furnish details of 2 pending criminal cases in his election affidavit in 2014. A bench headed by Chief Justice Ranjan Gogoi set aside the Bombay High Court order, which had given a clean chit to Fadnavis and had held that he did not deserve to be tried for the alleged offences under the Representation of Peoples Act. The bench, also comprising Justices Deepak Gupta and Anirudh Bose, said, and I quote, "The respondent, that is Fadnavis, has the knowledge of the 2 pending cases," unquote. The apex court's verdict came on the appeal of one Satish Unke against the High Court verdict. On the 23rd of July, the Supreme Court, while reserving the verdict, had said that the alleged omission by Fadnavis of not disclosing information about 2 criminal cases in his election affidavit may be decided in the trial. The apex court had said that it was concerned with a limited issue whether prima facie Section 125A of the RP Act is attracted or not. Some news about Article 370 coming in again from the Supreme Court. The court today fixed November 14th to commence hearing on a batch of petitions challenging the constitutional validity of the centre's decision to abrogate Article 370, which gave special status to Jammu and Kashmir. A five-judge constitution bench headed by Justice N.V. Ramana allowed the centre and the Jammu and Kashmir administration to file counter-affidavits on petitions challenging scrapping of Article 370. The top court refused the plea of petitioners that not more than 2 weeks be given to the centre and J&K administration for filing counter-affidavits. Union Minister and BJP Chief Amit Shah today declared in Kolkata that the centre will take the National Citizenship Registry across the country. And no matter how much the Trinamool Congress opposes it, the BJP will get it done. Those were Amit Shah's exact words. In the city of Kolkata to open pandals for Durga Puja, which is the state's biggest festival, Mr. Shah launched a full-scale political attack on the ruling Trinamool Congress and its chief minister, Mamata Banerjee. The chief minister, Amit Shah went on to say, is keen on keeping infiltrators in the state to expand her voter base. He said, and I quote, "Didi used to oppose these same people when they voted for communists. Now that they are voting for her, she wants to keep them. We cannot let national interest come ahead of any party's interest. Didi is saying she won't let NRC happen. I want to promise you, we won't let a single infiltrator stay. Not one refugee will have to go. Not one infiltrator will be able to stay. This is the BJP's promise." Unquote. Earlier this year, the BJP rolled out the citizens list in Assam. The implementation was, of course, hugely criticized, and it was found that it left out 19 lakh people. Even a section of BJP leaders in Assam have criticized it, claiming that the list left out a number of Bengali Hindus who were among the party's core voter group. Narendra Modi's attempts to woo the south of India continue. A long-standing tradition at the IIT Madras convocation was changed. The institution prescribed Indian attire for graduating students and research scholars instead of the distinctive gowns that are worn worldwide. Graduates, postgraduates, and research scholars were directed to come in white or off-white shirts or short kurtas with similarly colored dhotis, pajamas, or pants. Prime Minister Modi, who made his first visit to Tamil Nadu since his BJP storm to power in the elections in May, was also similarly attired. He was, of course, joined on the stage by the president of the board of directors of IIT Madras, Mr. Dr. Pawan Goenka of Mahindra & Mahindra. This, of course, attempt is continuing with the infiltration, I suppose, of Indian clothing everywhere. Nirmala Sitharaman carried the Bahi Khata, and there was also a UGC requesting universities to consider using handloom fabric for ceremonial dress. And then, of course, Prime Minister Modi's repeated invocation of Tamil Nadu in his speeches recently in the UN General Assembly as well as in Houston. So, whether or not this attempt to woo the Tamil Nadu voter will fructify is, of course, something we will watch out for. Well, if there is one state in the south of India that has had lotus blooming, that has got to be Karnataka. And now in the jewel of Karnataka, that is Bangalore, the new mayor is going to be also from the BJP. BJP's Gautam Kumar was elected the mayor of Bangalore city in the latest fallout of the collapse of the Congress-JDS government in Karnataka. Gautam Kumar defeated the Congress candidate with 17 votes. The election began just before noon at the city corporation headquarters, and the results were declared around 1 p.m. Besides, councillors, MPs, MLAs and MLCs who represent seats in Bangalore city limits were eligible to cast their votes in favour of the mayoral candidates. A set of instructions have been released by the DGP to district police chiefs to identify Bangladeshis along with other foreigners in the state. Uttar Pradesh Director General of Police O.P. Singh told media on Tuesday today that Bangladeshis were residing illegally while many of them were also missing. It is necessary to identify and verify Bangladeshis and other foreigners residing in the state for maintaining security in the state, he went on to say. All the railway stations, bus stations, new colonies and roadside locations where Bangladeshis and other foreign nationals seek shelter should be traced and its residents should be identified. All of it must be recorded on video. Those were the words of the DGP. The state police chief also directed the ADGs posted in the district will write to the Home Department after conducting verification. A day after onion growers from Nashik and Pune hit the roads to protest against last Sunday's export ban on onions, BJP MP from Dindori, Bharti Pawar, wrote to the Union Commerce Minister and the Union Agriculture Minister asking the ban to be rolled back. The export ban of onions and limits to the stock that traders can hold were taken to cool down prices, which had reached 70 rupees per kilogram in the retail markets because of lower production. Pawar, whose constituency encompasses the onion-growing belt of Nashik, pointed out how this decision of export ban would affect all onion growers in the country. She said, and I quote, "Maharashtra alone accounts for 33% of the onions produced in the country. This decision has caused great discontentment among them," unquote. The decision taken by the government in terms of onion prices comes even as Maharashtra and Haryana go to the polls in the next 20 days. The BJP Shiv Sena combine had swept the onion belt of Maharashtra in the 2019 Lok Sabha polls. The export ban has not gone down well with onion growers. India news done. Turning very quickly to international financial market news. As usual, we start with financial markets in the United States, the Dow. U.S. stock futures are pointing higher this morning on the back of renewed optimism in U.S.-China trade talks, and I have lost count of the number of times I've said that line. Keep in mind that, of course, October is historically the most volatile month of the year for stocks. During pre-election years dating as far back as 1950, the S&P 500 was flat for the month. Ahead of today's trading, the S&P 500 was up nearly 19% so far in 2019. Amazon is in talks to bring the cashierless technology that runs its Go stores to other retailers like airport shops and movie theaters, CNBC has reported. The effort would help Amazon grow its retail presence so the company can lower its reliance on online shopping, but at a faster pace and at a lower cost than building its own stores. Meanwhile, Juul Labs has announced it will stop supporting a ballot measure to overturn an anti-vaping law in San Francisco, effectively killing that campaign. The nation's largest maker of e-cigarettes said it will end its support for Proposition C after donating nearly $19 million. There's more news coming about Juul, which I will discuss in the tech roundup. Visa got off to a slow start in the fintech scene. Its recent deal with Revolut reveals one of the ways it hopes to catch up. Revolut, which is a London-based digital finance app, will use the card network's global footprint for international expansion. The fintech also works with Visa's arch-rival MasterCard in Europe, but it will use Visa to expand in 24 new markets for a total of 56 around the world. 4-year-old Revolut offers foreign exchange and stock and crypto brokerage, as well as peer-to-peer payments. Revolut says it will use the deal with Visa to expand to Australia, Brazil, Canada, Japan, New Zealand, Russia, Singapore, and the US, according to the statement. I spoke about this briefly yesterday. Kristalina Georgieva, a Bulgarian economist with a strong track record at the World Bank and the European Commission, says she is sleeves rolled and ready to work. And why is that? Because she has been named the IMF's new chief. The first IMF head from an emerging economy, her job is certainly not going to be easy after she takes over from Christine Lagarde. U.S. manufacturing sentiment may be improving. The Purchasing Managers Index, PMI, calculated from more than 300 buyers across the United States, is expected to rise to 50, which is, of course, the cutoff between expansion and contraction. It had slipped to 49.1 in August for the first time in 3 years. The Swiss bank's CEO, Pierre-Olivier Bouy, resigned after an internal investigation found that he, not Chief Executive Tidjane Thiam, ordered an investigation into the company's wealth management head, Iqbal Khan. Khan starts at rival UBS today. Japan's sales tax will go into effect now. An increase from 8 to 10% on a wide swathe of goods and services will either support Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's claim that the revenues will help Japan's economy or, as some analysts have said, throw it into a recession as consumers spend less. Well, international business news done. Let's get to the meat of the matter, which is, of course, a very, very eventful day in American politics coming straight out of Washington. Let's try and understand all that took place just today. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo apparently was on the July 25th phone call between President Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. That call spurred the whistleblower complaint about the president and now has led to the impeachment inquiry proceedings. Trump, meanwhile, also urged Australia's Prime Minister Scott Morrison to help Attorney General William Barr in his review of the origins of the Russia investigation. We might have forgotten this, but the whole thing started with Australia telling them that there is some involvement of Russia. The intelligence community inspector general pushed back hard on claims pushed by Trump allies that the whistleblower didn't have first-hand knowledge of the behavior outlined in the complaint. House Democrats, meanwhile, have subpoenaed Rudy Giuliani, who is the president's personal lawyer, for documents related to the Ukraine controversy. And as far as impeachment is concerned, how are Americans placed? They're, well, pretty evenly split right now about impeaching Trump and removing him from office. This, according to a new CNN poll. Support for impeachment has, of course, risen among independents and Republicans. You might recall that during Nixon's impeachment, approval for impeachment stood at about 19% across the country. But as the hearings went on and on, and the American people heard about the kind of criminal acts that had taken place, it gradually rose. As of now, approval for it is already at about 50%, and one hopes that it is only going to increase over time. Meanwhile, U.S. Representative Chris Collins of New York has resigned from Congress as he is expected to plead guilty today in a federal insider trading case. You might recall that Chris Collins was in fact the first sitting congressman to back Trump's bid for the White House. Now let's hop across the pond. It's been a rough couple of weeks, to say the least, for Bojo, the Prince of Clowns. His attempt at pushing through his Brexit strategy has, of course, hit major roadblocks. Now, of course, he's embroiled in another scandal about his alleged links to a US businesswoman, R. Curie, while he was mayor of London. The businesswoman and tech entrepreneur Jennifer R. Curie received tens of thousands of pounds in public funding when Johnson was mayor of London. So Johnson could be subjected to an official investigation. So it's almost like a mirror image of what's happening across the pond. I'm just wondering if the Atlantic Ocean is in fact a mirror. So Johnson has said he has done nothing wrong. Of course, there's also the other allegation that he's dealing with, that he groped a female journalist during a lunch about two decades ago in 1999. All said and done, bad day to be Boris Johnson. It is going to be China's 70th birthday. The celebrations will include a grand military parade, the kind of stuff that Donald Trump can only dream of. 15,000 troops, 160 warplanes, 580 tanks, and of course a massive fireworks display. President Xi Jinping declared that no force can stop China from forging ahead. And meanwhile in Hong Kong, police have reportedly shot a protester with a live round, and this is the first time that that has happened in the months of demonstrations. In what is surely going to be a Hollywood film, a San Francisco tour guide has been charged with spying for China. A 56-year-old ethnic Chinese naturalized American had been allegedly passing classified information on U.S. national security to China. The FBI tracked the man for 4 years. Now, quickly to the world of tech, two companies and have two different outcomes. I told you I'd speak a little bit about Juul earlier. Now, startups Juul and WeWork have each been valued at over $38 billion, and they've attracted talented employees, and they've, of course, promised to change the world. And they have both got rid of their CEOs last week amid crisis situations. But that is about where all the similarities end. This, according to a report by Recode. Now, what has happened at Juul? Kevin Burns, who was the CEO, was ousted last week amid some federal investigations into how Juul marketed to underage users, and employees, despite these difficulties, have enjoyed great benefits. When tobacco giant Altria valued Juul at about $38 billion and bought a huge stake in it last year, about 1,500 employees got about $1 million each. Now, contrast that with WeWork. CEO Adam Neumann has, of course, been ousted last week, but current employees and former employees are not happy. Some are even rooting for the company to fail. Neumann was able to take home, believe it or not, $700 million in cash and loans based on WeWork's high valuation, which means employees who joined the company recently may get close to nothing because WeWork is going to go public and who knows how it will do. According to a report by Washington Post, Uber is on the decline. Morale inside the company is apparently deflating. Since its IPO, Uber has laid off more than 800 employees, and investors are losing confidence in the company, according to several employees. Uber's growth has been slowing, and many are questioning whether the money-bleeding company can succeed. This, according to a report by the Washington Post. Facebook, according to Wall Street Journal, will launch the Facebook News will launch as early as the end of October and will appear on the toolbar of the Facebook mobile app and will feature content from about 200 publications, including Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, New York Times, Business Insider, HuffPost, and of course, for all your cat requirements, BuzzFeed. Though Facebook will pay some national news outlets as much as $3 million a year, several regional publications will get much less and some publishers won't get anything. This, according to the Wall Street Journal. And some other pieces of news that might interest you. Soon, it may be easier to get your hands on a cable that looks like a legitimate Apple Lightning cable, but which actually lets you remotely take over a computer. MG, which is the security researcher behind this recently developed tool, announced over the weekend that the cable has been successfully made in a factory. And if you're going, oh my God, This particular cable is aptly called the OMG cable. It charges phones and transfers data in the same way an Apple cable does, but it also contains a wireless hotspot that a hacker can connect to. Once they've done that, a hacker can run commands on the computer, potentially rummaging through a victim's files. For example, Jesus Christ, living in this world just gets more and more difficult each day. In some of the pieces of news that you absolutely have to know, especially about the solar system, astronomers are on the trail of something big, 5 to 15 times the mass of Earth, and orbiting the sun around beyond Neptune. This has been discussed widely. It's called Planet 9, which is the last undiscovered orbiting body in the solar system. And its discovery is expected in the not too distant future. But some people are saying that in fact could be a primordial black hole. I'm going to let you do some Googling and figure out what a primordial black hole is, but I will take you straight to Russia, which could be a black hole in its own way. The general notion every time someone mentions Russia is, of course, Putin and his shirtless pictures. And of course, the fact that they drink a lot of vodka. And that may just be a reputation on paper, because a report by the World Health Organization has shown that alcohol consumption in Russia has dropped by 43% since 2003. The WHO put the decrease down to a series of measures brought in by said Putin, including restrictions on alcohol sales and promotion of healthy lifestyles. And perhaps as a result of this, or because of a multitude of reasons, the life expectancy in Russia has also been increasing, 78 years for women and 68 years for men. Well, those were all the big stories that you absolutely had to know, but I can't let you go without also telling you what happened in the market. The BSE Sensex was down 362 points, or about 0.94%, to end at 38,305. The Nifty 50 ended at 11,359.9, down 115 points, or about 1% down. That's it. That's it from me for the 1st of October. All the pieces of news that were absolutely mandatory for you to listen to. I'll, of course, not see you tomorrow because it's Gandhi Jayanti and it's time for us to reflect on what kind of a country we have become, and wondering if Mahatma Gandhi is still the father of the nation. As far as I'm concerned, he is, but perhaps you will take tomorrow and the holiday that comes with it to reflect on that for yourself. Until the next time you hear from me, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, on behalf of the Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us, and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This has been today's Editor's Pick, and you've been listening to Money Control.
And now a word on a subscription product. Money Control Pro offers actionable investment ideas, independent research, insights and analysis from the world of business, economy, politics and policy. Get access to Money Control Pro at ₹599 for a year. Use code GETPRO. For more information, check out the Money Control website or mobile app.